All right, our third case for this morning is Lightspeed against Anthony Smith. The appeal of Mr. Steele. So, Mr. Steele, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, we have two matters up before this court today. Two issues. One is whether the court abuses discretion by considering evidence relied upon in a motion for reconsideration, and it contained evidence obtained or that could have been obtained long before the motion or the hearing, which took place on November 2014. The second issue is whether the district court erred in assessing criminal sanctions against the appellants for the conduct that has been attributed to them in the order, specifically regarding Steele, for example, the two emails that were sent by Steele to his two banks. So I can begin with the question of whether or not the district court abuses discretion by considering.
Before you do that, Mr. Hansmeier, as I understand, filed for bankruptcy, and his bankruptcy proceeding was converted to a Chapter 7.
I believe so. I'm not involved with that proceeding.
Are you purporting to represent him, or are you?
No, I don't purport to represent Paul Hansmeier as his attorney, but I would assume that if there was some motion that the other side would like to file regarding a bankruptcy, or whether some other third party would like to file, that they will.
Well,
I don't believe there's anything.
We've had supplemental authorities, and we have a filing. From Mr. Smith pointing out that Mr. Hansmeier is a Chapter 7 debtor, and so he's not permitted to pursue this appeal. He has no standing anymore. It's his trustee who's in charge of all this sort of thing, and so Mr. Smith argues that Mr. Hansmeier is just out of the case, essentially, as though he's not here.
I'm not aware of any pleadings that have been filed trying to bring Mr. Hansmeier's bankruptcy into this matter.
I'm telling you that there is a supplemental filing in this court, a Rule 28J letter. So if you're not representing him, it's not your problem, but I, just as a matter of record, would ask you to confine yourself to arguments pertaining to you.
Yes, Your Honor. The contempt, the abuse of discretion standard is very important because, as this court's made clear, motions for reconsideration are serve a limited function to correct manifest errors of law or to present any newly discovered evidence.
So I can't think of a single case where a court has allowed somebody to supplement a filing during the course of motions for reconsideration, which, after all, are under advisement for quite a while. It's filed December 15th. The district court doesn't rule until June the 5th of the next year. I just have never seen an abuse of discretion. If the district court says, no, you can't file it, we usually say, well, it's up to the district court to run its own docket. But if the district court, for some reason, thinks it's okay, why should we countermand that?
Well, because by definition, the abuse of discretion standard is to prevent abuse of discretion. If the court
that doesn't help me.
If the court were to first of all, the court took a pleading that was not a motion for reconsideration and converted it on its own to a motion for reconsideration. But the facts are, if the evidence presented in the motion for reconsideration was available or could have been available prior to the original hearing, then it should not be a motion for reconsideration, whether it was brought by.
That's for the district court's benefit, I would say. And I don't see why, if you had a problem with that evidence, you wouldn't have simply filed something, part of your opposition to reconsideration on the merits, you know, showing why the evidence doesn't call for a different result.
Right. Well, I argued specifically that, and during the original hearing, which took place November 2014, in which point this evidence was already in opposing counsel's hands, and I was standing in front of the court saying, please present any evidence to show these allegations. I'm standing here, I want to fight this, and I want to argue the matter before the court. None was presented. The documents, the boxes of documents, sat over by the opposing counsel's table and were not introduced whatsoever. So we went away, and that the court clearly ruled in my favor and said no sanction against Mr. Steele. Later on, multiple pleadings to just please court, let's talk about this again. Let me show you some more stuff we have. Let me try different theories of legal reasoning. Let me try different things. And finally, I guess after a certain number of times, I wasn't zero for nine. And eventually, you know, the court said, well, okay, I'm going to take this evidence that you had. And we can refer to the second issue, but I'm trying to keep it focused on the abuse of discretion regarding the motion for reconsideration. And if the court, the damages that have already been, sanctions already imposed upon me and the other appellants had already been offered up, had already been paid to the opposing counsel and his client. There was no, at the moment that this court ruled the way it did in the previous appeal, there was no outstanding issues before the court. There was no outstanding monies due anyone. This matter, at least to my understanding, had been completely wrapped up and taken care of. So what the appellees wish to do at this point was to say, well, now we want to go in and ask for some more sanctions, even though we already made whole. We want to become a private prosecutor, and we want to engage in a year of discovery, and we want to introduce, and when we re-argue that hearing, which we've already lost, and we'd like, so that's why that's important. If I can move on to the item number two, whether or not a sanction imposed without due process or without any sort of effort to recompensate.
Well, essentially, as I understand your argument on the second point, it's that that this was actually something that should have been characterized as criminal contempt.
Well,
and as criminal contempt, to punish, there are procedures, Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 42 in particular, that should have been followed but that were not. Now, this wouldn't get to the discovery sanction, but it would get to the other one.
Yes, and the two items that I personally have been alleged to have done something wrong is two emails I sent to two of my banks. These are emails I send, by the way, of similar nature almost every day as an attorney. I plan on sending more tomorrow, simply saying this is a pleading that I filed in this court. There you go. And that's all that the email said.
Well,
it's public
that's
record.
That's the merits. I thought you were making a procedural argument, which was that it should not have been adjudicated as a contempt or not by the district court without going through the procedures laid out by Rule 42. Maybe you're not making that argument.
Well, I'm making both a procedural and a substantive argument because procedurally this is not a contempt proceeding. The party has been made whole. The appellant's attorneys have been made whole. They've received all their compensation.
You're just saying it's not civil contempt. If it's not trying to either compensate or coerce,
Correct. It's
not civil contempt.
Correct.
But it might be criminal contempt.
Well, it can't be can't be civil, so if it's not criminal, then it's completely void in ab initio because there's clearly no other way that this could be. However, it's also improper to just label it a criminal contempt because there was no process followed along the lines of criminal contempt. It was simply made to punish and keep banging and keep beating the appellants for having been involved in this case from the beginning.
Well, I mean, the judge made some findings of fact, so I think that's an extravagant characterization. But whether the process was followed is another issue.
Right, and I would argue, with all due respect, that the process wasn't followed because if the appellees themselves say that $5,000 is what we need for based on this appellant's conduct, and after the court says, well, I'm going to give you whatever you want, submit a petition for fees, and the petition includes items that both sides, that everyone agrees were done either before the alleged bad conduct or had nothing to do with the alleged bad conduct.
Now you're talking about the discovery sanction, I think.
Well,
You're muddling this all together.
I apologize, Your Honor. I thought we were going on to the other issue. But for the criminal...
Well, there are two different sanctions. There's yes. the contempt and the discovery sanction.
Yes, Your Honor. And for the... Specifically regarding the criminal versus civil sanction, yes, we believe this cannot possibly be considered a civil sanction. And if it had been held up to those standards or those requirements provided, this would never have met the standard for that. But it's simply inappropriate to not give... in this case, there was simply a minute order entered a few minutes after their application for $95,000, saying, oh, the whole thing, you can have everything. I was not... And of course, we pointed out, appellants pointed out, most of these fees have nothing to do with the matters discussed or the issue allegedly improper, but not a penny was reduced. And it was clear from the court's findings and clear from the court's language that it was looking at to punish appellants. And it's improper for the court to criminally punish appellants for the conduct that was done, whether it was because I sent an email saying here's a pleading I filed, or whether it was because the court didn't agree that we were unable to pay the original sanction amount. And I'm not trying to re-argue matters that have already been before the court. We're only here today on the narrow issue of whether it's abuse of discretion to sanction someone $50-something thousand dollars for the first item I spoke about with the motion for reconsideration, and if it's appropriate to sanction me approximately $50,000 for sending the two emails that I admit openly to sending. And I've never been able to address that. There has never been any evidence presented whatsoever that Salvador or Chase Bank delayed anything or that there was any additional costs or problems associated with my simple emails. In fact, the evidence is my understanding that documents were in the appellee's possession long before the November 14th hearing, and maybe they chose not to present them. But that was their choice. And to sort of say, well, I know we had a hearing on this. I know everyone appeared. I know it's an evidentiary hearing. I know I didn't provide anything. But I want to spend a year doing some more discovery and then try to have some more bites at the apple. Just seems fundamentally unfair. And
okay,
I don't.
If you want to save a little bit of rebuttal time,
yes,
you might want to consider.
I apologize. Yes, I want to save the remaining for my rebuttal.
All right. Mr. Booth.
May it please the court, Dan Booth for Anthony Smith. These are the latest two frivolous appeals from a case that has been frivolous from the beginning.
So, Mr. Booth, let me tell you the only thing about this appeal that really has gotten my attention, and that is the portion of the sanction that was for contempt. I understand that the district court made some findings of fact, but I can't see a coercive motive for that sanction, and I can't see a compensatory motive for it. You got your compensation over on the other side with the discovery sanctions. It looks to me, reading the transcripts, that the judge was fed up with things and it was actually a punitive sanction. And if it was, then it has to be regarded as a criminal form of contempt, and Rule 42 spells out the process that needs to take place, and that is a process which did not take place here.
Indeed it did not.
So how can we not see this as a criminal contempt?
Well, the compensation that is available under civil contempt isn't limited to the attorney's fees and expenses that are incurred in addressing that contempt.
But there's no record that this sum of money, the contempt part of it, relates to anything. The judge makes a comment about how there's a mathematical relation to Judge Murphy's original order, but that's not what we need. That's sort of like how is he measuring the amount of punishment.
Our position is that as long as there is a basis in the record to affirm the contempt sanctions, then affirmance is what's appropriate. And there is that basis. First off, the 25% is not an unreasonable figure. There were certainly attorney's fees that were not submitted as part of our discovery.
But it's not in the record. Something tying $65,263, that's the sum, right? No, that's the contempt. I'm sorry, that's
right.
The contempt. And then the discovery is the $94,000 and some.
That's right. The $65,000 is appropriately compensable on an unjust enrichment theory. There, we have John Steele and Paul Hansmeier. During the time that money was being withheld from the court, not being disclosed to the court, John Steele was using that money in his Sabadell bank account to bankroll massive home renovations.
But he paid, I mean, the other amount of money in our original opinion, the 261, whatever it was, eventually gets paid, right?
Yes.
So that much, you know, however bumpy the road, you know, it got paid. And we have additional discovery costs being compensated. I'm not sure I'm following this unjust enrichment idea, and I'm not even sure that that counts as compensation. I mean, in the law of contract, you would think compensatory damages are different from unjust enrichment damages, because they aren't necessarily mirror images of one another. So I'm not saying that there weren't problems here. I'm just concerned with the way things moved ahead.
Well, the reason that an unjust enrichment sanction is appropriate is because of what he was doing at the same time. On the one hand, he's telling the court, I don't have this money. I can't afford to pay.
But how did you show that he needed to isn't disgorgement of unjust enrichment something anyway that's... It doesn't necessarily go to you.
And that was the court's decision, and that it would be appropriate to award it to Attorney
Smith.
That means
he thinks it's a punishment.
Anthony Smith was the one who made it clear to the judge that not only had they failed to show their inability to pay, but that they in fact significantly misrepresented their ability to pay, which was abundant.
And I understand.
And in the process of doing that, there are two different wrongs that were compensated. One, for the discovery, for the costs that were incurred as a result of the obstructed discovery. Two, there were the costs that are being compensated on the unjust enrichment theory. We believe it's appropriate to affirm on that
basis.
But
I don't understand. What did they represent?
They represented that they simply didn't have the money, and they said, this is the money
that
we have.
No, I know that. They said that. They moved funds all over the place. I'm just trying to get to the bottom, since I assume in your additional discovery cost, your attorney's fees featured prominently in that number.
They did.
So you got compensated for the attorney's fees. Are you saying you should be double compensated?
No, we're not seeking double compensation because we see these as two separate wrongs. The wrong of forcing us to conduct significant additional discovery that we could have avoided if they had simply not obstructed
discovery.
Right, and
you got compensated for that.
That's reasonable. There's a separate issue of during the almost year that it took for us to get the documents that demonstrated that, in fact, in John Steele's case, he had hundreds of thousands of dollars that he was flooding into his house and sending to contractors and sending to have his swimming pool rebuilt. All of these issues were, he was making money. He was getting rich using money that he should have been using to simply pay the sanction. That's unjust enrichment. And it's appropriate to compensate Smith. It's appropriate to impose.
But Smith didn't suffer from the unjust enrichment if he got compensated for both the original fine and for his discovery costs. I don't see where Smith is in that picture at all.
It's bad
behavior if that's what happened. No doubt the court could certainly regard misrepresentations to the court as serious instances of contempt. But you punish people for that. You don't, it's not coercive or compensatory.
Well, compensation, because in the Connolly case and in the Lehman case cited therein, the courts have found that compensation may not be limited just to fees and expenses, but may also include a feature of unjust enrichment. And I noticed in the brief that was filed on behalf of the appellants, they argue that that's not appropriate unless unjust enrichment has been pleaded against a party. Well, I looked back at the amended complaint, the one that brought my client into the case, and indeed, count three is unjust enrichment against defendant Smith. Count four is unjust enrichment against the other defendants. So they had an unjust enrichment theory that our client was being unjustly compensated.
But that was part of the damage award. So you've been compensated for the unjust enrichment too.
And so when unjust enrichment
again, why not double compensation?
Double compensation we don't believe would be appropriate, and we're not seeking double compensation. We're seeking affirmance.
I'm looking for the gap. You know, you got compensated under your original complaint. You got compensated for the discovery costs.
We limited our request for attorney's fees to matters that were specifically attributable to costs incurred as a result of the obstructed discovery.
The third-party discovery from the banks, that's what you're referring to?
Yes, it's the third-party discovery from the banks and related costs of moving for the motions. There were a variety of different costs that were related directly to those costs. Because we couldn't get the discovery from those banks, we needed to get discovery elsewhere, and so we had significant additional costs. We had to fend off motions to quash. We had to file motions for reconsideration.
Right, and this is all during a period of time when Mr. Steele and Mr. Hansmeier are in non-payment status, right?
That's right.
And so you're needing to get discovery about, with respect to Mr. Steele only, we'll confine it to that, since Mr. Hansmeier is in bankruptcy, you needed to get discovery about where his assets were and how much.
Right, we wanted to, because the issue still needing to be resolved was, were they telling the judge the truth? And we demonstrated that they weren't. So, but in addition, there were other motions filed. There were motions to hold us in contempt. There were, and so fending off those, we didn't seek compensation for that. We didn't seek compensation for the original motion for contempt because we thought that was something that was reasonably covered under the $65,000.
The judge's opinion, though, doesn't tie the you're essentially saying that even though you didn't seek compensation, it was okay for the judge to give you the compensation even without saying that he was giving you that compensation. And I guess I'm having trouble connecting those dots that way.
Well, as we see it, the award of expenses and fees in civil contempt proceedings is independent of any award of compensation. And so the compensation that's being awarded for the...
So he says, the court finds John Steele and Paul Hansmeier in contempt. Accordingly, the court awards sanctions against John Steele and Paul Hansmeier in the amount of $65,263 for their contemptuous statements in court. One might recognize that the amount of the sanction is 25% of Judge Murphy's original sanction, and that the last sanction from the undersigned was 10%. And he's talking about wrongdoing, misdeeds before the court. So I just, looking at the judge's reason for this, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with compensating you.
The reason that we don't see it as punitive, the reason
Well, but would you agree with me? That's hard to see in the judge's statement.
The judge is not expressly, is certainly not expressly talking
about it. He did not say anything like that. He's very cross with them for what he sees as serious contempt, misdeeds, as he puts it.
Right. And certainly he recognized that contempt is par for the course for these attorneys.
Well,
and
let's not, we don't need to get into that, but...
Well, it's not compensation.
What the judge didn't do is punish them. If he had wanted to punish them, this wouldn't have been a motion for reconsideration. The judge would have looked at the evidence that we submitted initially and said, there's enough here, I'm going to punish these gentlemen.
I don't see where you get that at all. I mean, a motion for reconsideration, the judge says he's reconsidering the whole thing, which he does.
Which he does, and quite rightly. And there was no abuse of discretion in reconsidering. The separate issue of whether the documents that he looked at when he was sanctioning Steele, whether it was appropriate to look at those. Well, if you look at the brief, Steele points to documents that were on the record before. He points to his fax to Sabadell. That's the critical document, which the judge had not focused on. He looks back at that and says, oh, yes, I see. He's sending this fax to Sabadell saying the matter has been stayed. He misrepresents in court what it was that he told Sabadell, and then that was a material obstruction of discovery. So there's no question there. The issue then of was this compensation under Connolly and under Lehman, it is appropriate to find compensation through an unjust enrichment theory.
When he said, if they continue their misdeeds before this court, what does that sound like?
He is reflecting on a consistent pattern that had been in front of him before. The case had already been up and down to this court after the case was found to be entirely frivolous, and after they were found not to have timely paid and not to have demonstrated they were unable to pay. They were found both in, they were sanctioned and then they were found in contempt. And then there were these additional acts of contempt that not only had they failed to show they were unable to pay, they had in fact misrepresented their ability materially. And the judge rightly found them in contempt for doing so. If there are any more questions?
I don't see any, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Steele? You have maybe a minute or two.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor pointed out very clearly that the court was clearly punishing and saying, if you guys keep doing this, I'm just going to keep coming up with bigger numbers until you guys go away. I'm going to teach you, if I'm going to smack you hard enough, eventually you'll get it. I'm punishing you. There's no question that that the judge's order clearly indicates that there was criminal contempt and that there was absolutely no safeguards of Rule 42 applied to me. The court, with all due respect to the court, it said in its order that I had said in my email that discovery was stayed. Your Honors can see the record for itself and see that I did not say that. So with all due respect to Judge Herndon, he perhaps got something erroneous, but there is not that word in there. So I'll just let the court deal with that or review that. Your court is correct. The counsels were full. They were paid in full. The money was put into the trust in case we lost our appeal. We lost the appeal. All the money was given to them. They got $300,000. And
so interest was paid on that.
Oh, yes. And it's important to realize we were penalized $26,000 for not having paid in time. We said, Your Honor, we can't pay in time. We can't pay the $260,000 in time. The court said, well, we're going to have a hearing on that. And then after they had the hearing, he said, now I'm going to sanction you $26,000 because you didn't pay the $260,000. So we paid all of the money, the $300,000, I paid it by borrowing from a friend and from a family member, and we put the money up in the court in case we lost the appeal. We lost the appeal. They got all the money. And now they said, well, this is a pretty good place to go for large sums of sanction fees. So they filed 8 or 9 more motions, sanction motions. And this is years after the case is finished, years after my one appearance in the court had been years ago. So and by the way, I'm the only person in this room that knows what I submitted under seal regarding my financials to the court. So I'm not sure how opposing counsel suddenly knows what I did and didn't say in that. I did tell the court that I had a house that appreciated. I told him every single dime, and it's completely 100% accurate what I sent to the court. He did not find that showed that I could not pay. I respectfully disagree, but we went forward under that presumption. He did not say, I find this all to be complete lies and I'm going to punish you for what you submitted to me under seal. If you read the record, it's clear that he does not say that that's fraudulent. So it's important to not get confused with some of these. They're really bad guys, so let's just start throwing the hammers at them. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right, thanks to both counsels. We'll take the case under advisement.